go.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And we are in season three, so I invite you to have a look at the two previous seasons. There might be some episodes there that kind of resonate with you. They're timeless, they're all kinds of issues. So I invite you to scroll and have a look. If there's any topic there that interests you, let me know as well, so I can keep giving you as much information and resources as possible. And today I'm really excited about having this guest on. I love her work. She is the author of Get Ready for TED, When TED Is Ready for You. For those who know me, you know that those who know me well know that I struggle with public speaking. So I'm really excited to have met that have Terry Kingston here with me. I'll let her introduce herself and talk about what she does. But she does amazing work. She's helping me a lot through my fear. And this is what we're going to be talking about today. So thank you so much, Terry, for joining me today. I'm really excited to have you on.
Well, it's a thrill to be here. I'm excited to chat with you and your parents and your listening community about, a number of things that we've lined up to talk about.
Yes, this should be an interesting. I could probably keep you on all day to talk about all sorts of things. We'll try to keep it short. But before we get started, can you kind of talk to us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Certainly. I often say if I had to tell my story in six words, it would be uprooted early, transplanted often, finding home. And what I mean by that is I was born in England, Liverpool, England, but we left when I was 5 or 6 years old and moved to Bermuda for the next kindergarten to grade eight. And I thought, we left a lot of family behind in England. We left everybody behind in England, but my mom was ill, and Bermuda had a nicer climate than Liverpool, as you can imagine. And so the school that we landed in Bermuda was, it was the only Catholic school on the island. It was run by nuns, and it had a very high music, theater, art, drama component to it. And so from a very early age, I was on stage. They had a play every year, and I was often one of the main characters. They loved my little Liverpool accent and all the rest of it. And so if I wasn't on stage, I was taking piano lessons or in the school band. And so I kind of grew up in this atmosphere of the stage for me was fun. It was an exciting place to be. I got to be creative. And I was also the bossy little kid in the neighborhood that wanted all the kids to play a certain way. And I would write plays for everybody. And then I would organize them and we put them on and we would charge the adults in the neighborhood to come and watch these plays. So I have been playing with words since I was a little girl. And I've also been playing the piano since I was a little girl. And the reason I'm telling you both sides of that story is for me, words in the stage and being in front of an audience when I'm speaking was delightful and fun and enjoyable. Being on stage when I was playing the piano was a totally different game. And that's because of the way I was taught. And so, one of the questions we are going to look at, and I'm going to slide it into the story right now, Danielle, is there anything that we overlook as parents that help children as they're growing into something they enjoy or something they get nervous about and get anxious about? And so, for me, it was the way I was taught as a young pianist. It was very strict. Often the mistakes were focused on more than just enjoying playing the piano. So I built up a fear of the piano in a way that I never had a fear of public speaking. And so that's why, in the work I do with coaching speakers now, I have a particular insight into how to help them be confident and calm when they're speaking, based on the deep story I had of mistake after mistake when I was playing. I went through a file folder of all my exam results from the time I was six until my Bachelor of Music degree from Queen's University in my 20s. And it always said the same thing: a beautiful, gifted pianist, very musical. Too bad the mistakes marred the performance. a wonderful gifted exam today. Too bad the memory flaws ruined the performance. Can you imagine how that adds up year after year? So my story is interwoven between moving a lot. We moved to Canada when I was 13, totally different school, totally different piano teacher. And yet, when I sit down to play the piano, I still have to do a whole bunch of mental gymnastics before I'm comfortable enough even to play at a small church here in town on Sundays. So performance anxiety, where we get our joy from when we're giving a gift of something to an audience, or how that gift can become, quite terrorizing, is how I have built an understanding of the neuropsychology of performance anxiety for musicians and for speakers, and how that gets woven into everything I do as a coach.
That
Short
is
story, lots in there, I know.
amazing. Yeah, I love that. I didn't know that side of you.
Not
But
many people
it's,
do anymore.
yeah, because I know you've mentioned before when we were working together, you mentioned that when you were playing piano, you were so nervous. And but I watch you speak, and it's so I never, it's funny because for me, it's the opposite. I could perform because I danced mostly on stage, and that I could do. Speaking, I couldn't, just because I was always told to be quiet. So I learned very young, and this is what we're going to kind of lead into, is I'm very self-conscious of the way I spoke or what I said. But I kind of converted that into body language, where with dance I could express myself the way I wanted to. So dancing was never an issue, and especially when you have the spotlights on, you can't see the audience. But speaking, I freeze. So I find it so interesting. Everybody is different. And before we get into the impact on children, like you mentioned, the way that we approach things with our children when they need to perform and how that could kind of traumatize them, maybe. We talked on that thing, and I wanted to start off for the adults, for the parents, for any adults, the importance of storytelling. This is something that we hear a lot more of now, storytelling, but it's not just about telling story. There's some benefits to developing those skills. So can you kind of tell from your experience, both on a, for adults on a personal or even professional, like how they present themselves at work or when they have to do some kind of presentation, how can storytelling help us on both the professional level and the personal level?
It's harder to define on the personal level, but for definitely on the professional level, learning storytelling techniques. So not just telling a story, because everybody's got, Uncle John or Aunt Sue at a Thanksgiving dinner that can go on and on and on. And they think they're storytellers because words come easily and they're very involved in what they're saying. But the audience is a little bored, or the audience just wants them, to have another drink or just stop talking because they've lost the thread, or they're one of those people that starts a story and then they backtrack and then they go here and then they come there, and they don't know how to tell a story in a straight line. They don't know how to tell a story that has an end meaning that is meaningful to the people who are listening to it. So the whole skill as a storytelling coach is to help people, excuse me, understand that it's not the story itself that's important. It's the end message for the audience, or the lesson that you have embedded in yourself based on a story you lived through as a child or a story you're living through now as a parent. But what's the actual meaning or outcome for the audience? And when you learn to talk about what listeners need to hear rather than what you want to say, can you imagine what difference that would make at work? If you're in a meeting and you start to think, what does the team around the table really need to hear me say in this next 5 minutes to move the agenda forward, to change how we're thinking about a value or an outcome? Or am I just going to talk away for 10, 15 minutes and they go back to their desk and say, well, that could have been an email. And so people get, storytelling can be this big thing, mystery thing. They think they don't know how to do it. The danger is the people who think they do know how to do it, but they don't really understand the skill set behind really effective storytelling. And so that's where a lot of the training that I've learned, how to tell stories within a time frame with a specific outcome, so that listeners will get the message I want them to have, and it will have the impact it needs to have so that they think, feel, act, or do differently.
Right. Wow, that's so important, because we've all been through that, of, or even ourselves when we're telling a story, we're like, I don't remember where I was going with this, you know. It's a good indication that, yeah, might need to work on those storytelling skills. But I like that, especially just get to the point, let's get it done on a professional level. It's so important. Gives you more credibility as well, I think, because then you're just, you know what you're talking about. I like that. Moving on to the kids now, you mentioned with your story how the way that adults handle the certain situations when it comes to children having to present or put themselves out there. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit more on that? And most specifically, what are we overlooking? Because you've lived it, I've lived it as well. But what are we overlooking as parents when we want to help our children? It could be something as simple as the first day of school, or you know, coming back from holidays, or you know, the jitters for a presentation or a performance that they have to do at school.
Well, let me just say, my children are quite grown up, right? I have, you know, two adult children, but I do have two little grandchildren, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I have seen how the new generation of parenting, with what they're calling gentle parenting, is working with both of them when it's things like first day at school, or when it's approaching a new situation. And I really love watching my son and his wife develop that type of safe relationship with both children, so the children feel encouraged and nurtured and able to step forward into new territory with the little bit of courage that we need sometimes when we don't know what we're going into. But having said that, some of that comes from not perpetuating your own fears in the next generation. And by that, I mean, if you're really afraid of, let's say, needles, vaccinations or something, and you've got to take your child to a doctor's office, or you hated your first day of school or anything new, it's really easy to pass those little threads of nerves along to your children. And so for me, the place of growing confident, strong, creative, loving, kind human beings, which I think is our job as parents, is to manage that energy within yourself first. And so I have three words I want parents to think about, and performers and speakers, when you're thinking about this. The first thing you need to do is neutralize your own energy. It's not going to help your child if you're really anxious about a doctor's visit, for example. And so maybe you need to, before you even talk to them about what's coming up for them, or that first day at school, or a first job interview when they're older, is you need to take yourself aside, use your own nervous system regulation techniques that you might have learned, or go and learn some. I know a lot of people really love tapping to calm nerves down. I've used that a lot with different people. Breathing, but make sure you're neutralized yourself so that your own energy isn't all kind of, yeah, we're going to do this and I'm so nervous, I'm afraid of heights, so you're not going to cross that bridge kind of thing, right? Right. And then the second one is to normalize the experience for them. And by that, I mean, if they have a school presentation coming up and you always hated public speaking when you were little, then you need to put them in a situation where they can practice, so that public speaking for them is normal. Fill their bed with teddies and have them practice their talk in front of teddies, or get, you know, the nice neighbors, like I used to do with the neighbors down the street in Bermuda. Get them to come and see your little performance. Have the opportunity to expose them to the situation they're afraid of, so that it becomes, oh, that's not so scary after all. Maybe this isn't so bad to talk in front of this crowd of people. And so by neutralizing your own emotions and theirs, helping them to regulate their, when they're overexcited or when they're nervous, neutralize the overexcitement, normalize the opportunity, the occasion that's being presented by public speaking or playing the piano. And, you know, they say you teach most what you most need to learn. I'm still teaching this to myself. Normalize it by exposing yourself. Toastmasters is great if you want to practice public speaking. It's a safe learning environment where you learn to normalize speaking in front of an audience and getting feedback. And then when you neutralize the overly excited energy, when you normalize the stimuli, the exposure, then you get to nail your delivery. So neutralize, normalize to be able to nail your message.
I love that. And you're so right. I didn't even think of that. But for myself, my mom used to put me on stages as much as she could. And I never understood it. But I noticed later on that the more I did it, the easier it became. It's like you said, the practice is so important. We think, oh, it's in my head, I got it. But it's so true that the nerve part, when your body thinks it's in danger, doesn't matter how much you know it in your head, if you haven't practiced it, it'll take over. So I really
Oh,
like
so
that.
there's a whole thing about how to practice so that you're convincing your central nervous system and your brain that you know what you're doing. And doing it in your head is not enough. And so when I'm working with speakers, they do practice out loud, especially if the story is emotional or difficult, because the more our ears hear our own voice say a story out loud, we're helping our own internal processing understand the story as we're telling it, understand where we were when it happened and where we are now. And then it flows more naturally and it doesn't have that wrong emotional charge, right? The neuropsychology behind all of this is fascinating. And it's most, I worked with performance anxiety with musicians, like high level musicians with big auditions coming up, drawing out of my own experience of almost not being able to do my final exam at Queen's University, piano performance in front of a jury of 5, 6 professors. They wanted me, the medical department wanted me to go on beta blockers so I could, you know, not be so nervous, but that interferes with all the fine motor stuff you need when you're playing the piano. So it was only after I graduated that I started to really understand why I was so nervous in the first place and what to do about it ahead of the performance so that my amygdala and my whole nervous system wouldn't get hijacked when I was performing. And that is a whole study. But there's one person I studied with, and she said 98% of people who have stage fright, performance anxiety, have a really good reason for it. And that's because they aren't as prepared as they think they are. And you cannot fool your own brain. And so a big part of what I work with people on is how to feel performance ready when you need it, not after. Big deal.
That's a big step. Yeah, that can be very helpful. Oh, I like that. And I like that you mentioned also just to kind of break that pattern of passing that on to our children, whatever we're going through, our children may not be going through, and to maybe not belittle their feelings. That fear is real for some reason to them. So I like the way, that's why I like about your approach, is it's very human. It's just like, listen, we'll get through it. There's a way around this, and there's a science behind this. Let's get through it. That's
and
kind
you
of
never deny the fear in yourself or the child. And I even have my speakers say, you know, because we do get nervous, excited, let's say excited rather than nervous, before a big talk. And so you have to kind of say, oh, hello, little fear. I hear you. I see that, you know, we may be moving into that sort of red danger zone. Let's just address that for a minute. Let's sit quietly. Let's do the four square breathing. Let's do the things we know that neutralize that overly excited energy. You never push fear aside. You never say, oh, don't be so silly. You know, oh, you've got this. Like, don't dismiss the fears that people express before a big speech or before, you know, stepping in front of their kids, their own peers in a classroom. You really need to say, yeah, I get that. I totally understand. And not but, I totally understand. And remember how we practiced this, or remember how good it was when you did that for your grandma the other day. That's where the language, the reframing of, let's move out of the fear language into the, what's the outcome they want? And then keep rewarding that rather than, oh yeah, I know, and I used to be this, and it can be really scary. Use the future positive after you say, yes, I hear you, I get it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes. Because working in early childhood education, we we work on those communication skills, right? And how to, so yes, validating the emotion, the fear
Oh,
at
yeah.
first, so they feel safe talking to you about it and then addressing the issue. You did mention a few things, so I kind of switch it up a little bit. I wanted to ask you, you've mentioned the tapping, you've mentioned the four square breathing. Are there any other quick little tips like that that you could recommend for both us adults or for children that we could teach on how to kind of calm down the nervous system before getting ready, or even when you are on stage and you feel those symptoms popping up with any
Pop up.
quick,
Yeah, so some of it is understanding how your nervous system reacts. Like I get a little hyperactive when I'm really getting nervous, and I don't sleep very well, which isn't great. But I've learned how to deal with that. But my body vibrates at a higher energy level when I'm getting excited. So I've learned to do almost like the New Zealand rugby team when they're going, huh! So I've learned I have to drop my energy deep into my body, and I will go in a warm-up room or before the talk happens, if I have to stay in the auditorium, and bang my feet in the ladies' washroom, go and drop my voice and drop my energy down into the root chakra and the solar plexus and all that. And women, especially when we're nervous, our voices go higher because we're not breathing as much, and it can be really irritating to listen to. And so dropping the voice into the chest area, sometimes I'll do almost like a King Kong pounding on the chest, because that gets the chest echoing, reverberating going. I do vocal warm-ups. I'll go, and it's a way of buzzing out some of that extra energy. And you can go, if you're a mosquito in the room, and all of these things become very playful. And yet the body goes, okay, I see what's happening. We're a little too energetic. Let's release that before I get on stage and then, throw it up all over the audience kind of thing. So it's that warm up the voice. I do tongue twisters. And so you're going the tip of the tongue, the teeth, the lips, the tip of the tongue, the teeth, the lips. And what that does, and your jaw, so that you're letting your whole vocal communication apparatus know, okay, we're going on stage. We want to be our voice to sound warm and lively and exciting. And we want to be able to soften it when we need to. And we want to be able to be more powerful when we need to. So that whole range of vocal things, that's storytelling as well. And so practicing that and learning what your voice does. Some people's throats close up. I've worked with singers who, the minute they step up to sing, all of a sudden their voice goes, what do you mean I need to sing now? And so practicing getting over that dry mouth. I have high blood pressure now. So when I was competing in the speech contest last year, I noticed I got really dry mouth just before I spoke. So I had lemons nearby, or I had something that I could just take a little, or even thinking of a lemon, then all of a sudden you've got more saliva. There are so many little tricks that help with that, but it becomes part of your toolkit as a speaker to understand what you need. What works for me might not work for you. But when you're coaching someone through getting ready for performance, those are the things we look at. And then you practice. And then you find out what really works for you.
I love that. And this would all work with kids. I could just see it. They would love to
Absolutely.
stomp and they would love to do the King Kong and
Yeah.
the mosquitoes. Such great visuals to help children. And as we're teaching them, we're helping ourselves too. So I think that's great. You've given us
So much fun.
a lot of gold right there. Thank you so much. I could talk to you all day about this, but I want to get into your book. This is great. It's a, get ready for TED when TED is ready for you. But what I appreciate about this book is it doesn't have to be you ready to go for a TED or TEDx talk. You can apply it to everyday life. So can you kind of talk, we'll put a plug in for your book as well.
Well, the reason, and someone said to me the other day, he said it really should be called Get Ready for TED Before TED Is Ready for You. And he's right. But I'd always said Ready for TED When TED Is Ready for You. And what it means is the reason I love coaching people for a TEDx stage is that the TED style of speaking is very story based. There's other speaking contests, or even Toastmasters are a little bit more performance oriented in some ways, although Toastmasters is slowly learning to be more conversational, to be less, dramatic in order to get a point across. And I can say this because I've been a Toastmaster since 2002 and still am. So, but TED's style storytelling, it's like the gold standard of public speaking now. And I tell people, if they go through my, journey to TED program, and they're learning the storytelling skills, they're learning how to use audience-centered communication as an endpoint. It's like a mini compressed public speaking course in about, 8 sessions of coaching that they can then use for leading a team, or they can use it in a town hall. If persuasive speaking is a huge part of the TED style, how do you get an audience to change how they're thinking about something in under 12 minutes? You need to really know what you're doing in order to have a current situation in an audience and move them towards a desired way of thinking within a 12 minute. That's what I do when I'm working with, with people who want to get on the TED stage. And those who don't, then they will learn to be a better public speaker, and it will help in their career. The hard thing about the TEDx stage, though, is 95% of people who want to do a TEDx talk, and there are thousands of them all over the world, they never get their yes from a TED selection committee. So 95% of the people who want to step on the TEDx stage never get the chance because they don't know what a TEDx committee is looking for. They don't know how to do the application process. They don't know how to zero in on their one idea worth spreading. And so they miss the chance over and over again. And to me, that's heartbreaking. So that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, that's what I appreciate about the book too. And your intensive as well is how to get ready for that. It's one thing to get ready for the stage, but you need to get on stage first. So let's get you on stage and, your video, how to present yourself. And I think that's wonderful. It gives you a head start on everything.
And so, I just want to see more people have the opportunity to learn what you can learn when you are a TEDx speaker. Because it's if you're in a good event and you get good event coaches, it can be transformative and life-changing, truly.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yes. Oh. Again, I could keep you going all day. Do you have anything coming? I mean, you do have programs for this to help people with presentation and storytelling, but do you have anything new coming up, or did you want to talk about what you do offer as services and programs?
Well, I do mostly because I'm out here in rural New Brunswick now on the Bay of Fundy in this beautiful town of St. Andrews by the sea. I do a lot of my coaching over Zoom. And I do a lot of my workshops, but I am going to start doing workshops live here in St. Andrews and maybe in St. John, New Brunswick as well. I miss working with people in person. And so I do have a 2-hour Get Ready for TED Intensive, which I know you have done with me in the past and a number of our fellow authors in the Lucky Book Publishing community. Because I feel if you have a book, you have a TEDx talk in there somewhere. And sometimes it's just learning to translate what you did as an author to what you need to do as a speaker and how to show that to the different committees. So I will always have the 2-hour intensive, and you just have to send me a message to realimpactspeaking.com and Terry at realimpactspeaking.com. Danielle will have the links, I know.
Yes.
But it's easy to book a 30-minute let's just chat, discovery chat, so I can find out a little bit more about what you want and what you need. I do have a 4-session coaching package or an 8-session coaching package. Those are one-on-one coaching. It's more on the high end of of what your investment would be to work with me, but it's personalized. I don't do a planned program for anybody because every speaker who comes to me is in a different stage of their own skill development. I want to start where you are and move you as far as I can, as fast as I can. So I call it bespoke. I'm like going to a tailor to have a suit, custom made suit made just for you, rather than everybody's going to wear the off the rack, same speaker coaching training.
I like that because you're right, especially when it comes to public speaking, everybody is different. So there's no cookie cutter formula to follow there because especially if it's performance anxiety, having to perform in front of people that you may think they're doing better than you, it kind of shuts you down too. So I
Yeah.
like that. I like that
So
tailored.
I do have a confidence booster pack that, is three coaching sessions with me to really just deal with that performance anxiety. And I'm going to be promoting that more because I keep hearing that coming up as one of the major barriers for people feeling really good. I want anybody that steps onto a stage to feel ready, and I want them to step off the stage feeling, wow, I did it. That was the speech I wanted to give. And so that's where a lot of my coaching comes from.
Oh, that's great. Oh, thank you so much. Before we wrap it up, I do ask that one question I prepared you for. Just a lot of people kind of think I'm strange when I ask this question, but what do you want to be when you grow up?
Right. So I think about that. Well, I don't think I'm ever going to grow up because that's just that kind of who I am. And I saw a quote this morning, and it was Stephen Fry, who's a gentleman I love. He's, a scientist, he's a deep thinker, huge communicator. And he said, Oscar Wilde said that if you know what you want to be, then you inevitably become it. And that is your punishment. But if you never know, then you can be anything. And he goes on to say, there is a truth to that. We are not nouns, we are verbs. I'm not a
Wow.
thing. I'm not an actor or a writer or a coach or a speaker. I'm a person who does things. I speak, I act, I play the piano, I coach people. If we limit ourselves to being a noun, that's a label. But if we're this ongoing, ever creative verb, who knows what I will be tomorrow as I continue to evolve and grow. And I just thought that was perfect based on knowing this question was coming up today. So I'm not a noun, I'm a verb. And may I always be an exciting, vibrant, fun, curious, engaging, and loving verb.
I love that. I really like that. Not a noun. I like, because I work a lot on trying to get rid of those labels and,
Yes.
bust the box open. So I like that. Yes, we're verbs. We're not nouns. I love that.
Yeah, there you go. You have a new slogan for when you're
Yes.
working with your kids. Be a verb.
Be a verb. Yes, I love it. This is why I like asking that question. We never get the same answer. It's always so inspiring in a way just to see how people think. And I like that I'm taking that with me. Be a verb. All
Be a
right.
verb, but a
Now,
kind
a
verb.
kind and loving. Yes, I love that. Now you've mentioned, I will add in the description box how people can reach you, but so there's the email where they can find some information. Is there, did you want to share as well, maybe if they want to follow you, see the kind of work that you're doing,
Yep,
the
the
best way
best
to reach
place,
you?
sorry, the best place is LinkedIn. I don't accept any more friends on Facebook because I really don't do a lot. Facebook for me is more friends and family. But LinkedIn is my professional profile, and I do try to post, like I've been putting up TED Tip Tuesday for quite a while now to help people understand the language of TED and what the TEDx world is looking for. And then on Fridays, I do what I call Flip It Friday, where I'm talking about my work with grief and bereavement, because that's the other line of speaking that I do. So following me on LinkedIn is a really good idea, and I'd love to follow you and support people in any way I can in the LinkedIn community as well. So I'm not on TikTok or any, I'm too old for some of these things. So LinkedIn is my sweet spot for professional connections and coaching clients and that world.
Yeah, that's good. And you're right. We don't need to be on all of the platforms if it doesn't work
It
for us.
works well for some people. It just doesn't work for me. Yeah.
Exactly. I find that it's the same. There's so many that just become more of a distraction than what you're trying to do. So I like that. And I will put the information on there for your LinkedIn and the email as well that they can reach. And of course, the book is available on Amazon, so you can get it there as well. I had another plug in there for you. So
Well, thank you.
thank you so much, Terry, for coming on and sharing all this information. Very helpful. I've got some notes, and I know I'm working with you, but I'm still learning so much, and I do appreciate it. And for anybody who is looking to kind of take their storytelling skills or speaking skills to the next level, I really do recommend. And I'm not just saying that because I know you very well, but working with you from my experience, it's such a gentle way of approaching something that could get you nervous. So I really do appreciate the work that you do. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to work with people to help them shine when it really counts, right?
Exactly. I
Yeah.
love that. Well, thank you. And for everybody watching, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to go check out Terry Kingston on LinkedIn. And if you do want to know more about how she can help you, definitely send her an email. Until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.